Okay, we're being reported, so then we should get this row on the show. Okay. It's September 16th, 2021, the monthly meeting of the Sustainability Advisory Board at 6:04. So the meeting is in session. So why don't we just go around real quickly and introduce ourselves? I'll start. I'm Terrence Shoemaker, co-chair. Kim?
Kim Bria, co-chair.
Victoria?
Oh, well, I'm a member of the committee, Victoria Meyer.
Jerry, city manager.
Okay, very good. Well, there we are. Seeing no public, then we'll skip that and go into check-ins. And why don't we start with Victoria? Anything?
I was pretty happy to be able to get the speaker going for the water on Tuesday. That was interesting. Terrence, I'm sorry you missed it, but I think it was recorded. And yes, what I like best is there's a lot of material on their website that is open for us to use in terms of education if we want to educate anybody.
Okay. We're going to get asked for an update from you a little later in the meeting, so that's great. Kim, anything to report?
I am reporting live from the Oktoberfest in Mount Angel, and from a sustainability aspect, my headpiece is fresh flowers and not silk, so at least it's natural materials. And my father plays accordion, and it's important to support the musicians in our lives. And I can't remember at our last meeting if I talked about the Green Transportation Summit.
Mm-hmm, you did.
Okay, well then never mind. There's nothing to check in on. I did attend the water conversation that Victoria did a fabulous job facilitating with Jerry. And I'm looking forward to getting some progress in our meeting tonight.
Excellent. Jerry, anything to report?
On Kim? Kim, you just look so wonderful wearing that. It's terrific. You can have little hops in there.
Yeah.
And did you say your father plays accordion?
Score! I love that.
Yeah, Kim is going to be a major distraction during the meeting tonight. Oh, Jerry, anything to report?
Maybe I'll wait for the staff check. I've got updates. So maybe I'll wait for the relevant portions.
Okay. Sounds good. About the only thing new for me to report is I'm working, I think I told you before, organization called Westland Lake Oswego Village. It's one of 11 villages in the Portland metro area that is, they are aging in place villages that allow people to age in their homes by offering all sorts of support. We're setting up a recycling program, and we're getting a good bit of activity. So I've developed some flyers for that. We're looking at trying to expand what we recycle. And as a result of that, I decided not to go with Ridwell because we're taking care of a lot of stuff and what happens with the Westland Sustainability Coalition. That's kind of fun. So that's it from my end. So jump right to the item number five. I'm sorry. I missed item two. Did anybody have any additions or corrections to the minutes from the August meeting? None whatsoever. Okay. Well, I assume they're approved. Everybody in favor of approving, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah. Okay. So be it. Move on to item five. Plain Cities and West Coast Electric enrollment update. Just really quickly want to find out, we know leaders in sustainability, those have been submitted. So that's for right now, that's a done deal. As far as submitting the
Everything's been submitted. It's been initially reviewed by Alex. I'm meeting tomorrow with, I think his title is facilities manager. His name's Jeremy, and we are gonna go over the applications and then go over them again with Alex, or go over them in whole with Alex on sometime next week. We should be fine there.
Great. And as far as the Clean Cities and West Coast Electric enrollment.
So we are a member of the Clean Cities. I sent them an email not long after we signed up and I didn't get a response. I followed up again today and we're scheduled to talk tomorrow. So we'll learn a little bit more about all the services they offer.
Sounds good.
And we joined at the base membership level or the $300 membership level, so. I think you're on mute.
I was taking notes there. I didn't want the keyboard noise, so sorry. Any other comments on that? Kim, any further ideas or thoughts on that? Are we where we want to be?
Just to, if Jerry, if you can share with us after your meeting where we're at, especially with, I mean, we're all interested, I think, in, and you are too, in grant opportunities, you know, and how, you know, and how they can support our staff in implementing and maintenance and all that good stuff. So just, you know, if you can give us an update after you meet with them, that'd be great.
Absolutely. He said he noted your name in his email response, Mike Graham, Kim. He said you've been the champion within City Hall. He mentioned resources, including technical support, advanced technician training for all alternative fuels, relationships, noting their connections throughout the state, Washington and California, and then recognition inside a quarterly coalition insider, which I don't know what that is yet, but I'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah, they connect with the U.S. Department of Energy, which is a great relationship to have to catch, you know, opportunities.
Okay, so we're good with that? Anything else to discuss on that? Okay. The next one, item six, I think, is one that I'll probably want to discuss a little bit in detail. That's community development codes. And as you all know, the council sort of charged the SAB with making recommendations to, I would say, improvements or changes to community development codes. And both Kim and I spoke with Darren Weiss, planning department, and we came up, I think prior in our meetings, we had talked about some specific items. And I think we agreed, and Darren also indicated to both Kim and I that the best process for us to use is what we thought would be the best process. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kim, that we propose to the city specific items related to sustainability, which would apply in the community development codes. We propose to the city changes, recommendations, in hopes that the city can implement them, and then decisions they make would go back to Jerry and he would allocate staff time or funds to do that. Can I get that? And do you want to expand on that?
Well, I mean, one of the takeaways I had from our conversation with Darren and in previous conversations with the SAB is that, you know, the goal is to eliminate some of the barriers to have sustainable housing. You know, I mean, even just our permit fees are a barrier to accessory dwelling units, that kind of thing. And some of these might not be community development code. You know, if we were, like we had talked about, for example, adding a circuit for a charging station. So if you're building a new home, a builder may not need to put in a charging station, but if they have a circuit dedicated to charging station and or one for solar, that's eliminates a barrier for a new homeowner to add that rather than having to go and opening up utility trenches again. That might not be a community development code, that may be in the permitting. So we've got a variety of things. And I think the biggest takeaway is, what are we trying to accomplish as a board for our recommendations? And does that fit into this, the community development code? Does that fit into municipal code, or does that fit into permitting? Because private sector, you know, the world outside of our city, any city, is outpacing a lot of local governments in their permitting and their community development code. So how do we keep up with that and be smart about our development? Did Terry? I see your lips moving.
Sorry, I'm trying to be polite, not to let you listen to my typing, but geez, user headspace.
I'm writing some notes too. I got your back.
I spoke with Darren about this, and I spoke at previous meetings that one of my big concerns is the ability for developers to develop a piece of property using the scorched earth method. And up on Bland Circle right now is, I don't know, it could be 8-9 acres that's been totally eliminated of all trees. It was forested and totally eliminated except for one specimen tree is left. That should not happen. That's appalling. So I really feel that there needs to be a change to the codes somehow so that we can maintain growth, you know, specimen trees within a new developed area so that all of the overstory is not eliminated, because we've totally wiped out 10 acres of environment for critters. You know, just gone. It's down to bare earth. Darren mentioned something about the possibility. I know builders want to maximize. Want to maximize their profits. Everybody does. He mentioned the possibility of maybe having in the codes 20% of trees be left, and but some of the lots may have to be smaller. A builder wants to build 25 houses, maybe they can build 25 houses, leave 20% of the trees, and some of the lots are just smaller, so they still get 25 houses. So that is a possibility, but that's kind of my one of my soapbox things to think about. So we, as the SAB, will be in the proposal mode, right? So I think we all have to agree, maybe not just today, but we all have to agree on some key things that we feel need to be addressed. Like Kim said, wherever they change in the codes, the permitting, wherever, we need to agree pretty soon on some key areas to address so we can begin proposing that to city council.
And maybe, oh, go ahead, Victoria.
Well, this is reminding me of the flap a couple of years ago, three, when Sunset Elementary was built. That because city code was firm that there were to me 92, 94 parking places because of the size of the building. Well, elementary children don't drive to school. So they took out a third of the park in order to have to be able to build to code. And there's a large parking lot that's relatively unused. So that seems to me that kind of falls into that same concept. And it interests me that, you know, it's sort of chicken and egg. You know, do you look at the codes first, or do you look at your philosophy first? And yeah, where do you start?
The other big takeaway, which really feeds to that, Victoria, is that this isn't linear. Like, we can look through the codes and you think you're fixing one thing by addressing that code, but that can create a lot more problems because it affects three other codes and it may cancel out another code. So, you know, there's like a sacredness to the codes of keeping them functioning the way they're meant to. And at the same time, how do we update them without having a negative impact in another area? And even on parking, I've worked on, you know, engineering projects where you had to have so many parking spaces per code for that type of building. But it's interesting, like a church may need so much parking because they usually only have service on Sundays and they don't have this big flux of everyday traffic. But if they sell it to another type of business, which would be a different zoning, the parking requirements change. So it's very interesting, even just tweaking that stuff. You're absolutely right. Little kids aren't driving to school and parking all day, but then does that affect another similar size building and impact a neighborhood? So anything we're doing with the best of intentions can have negative impacts. So just so that we're very thoughtful and what are we trying to accomplish?
I like your question, what are we trying to accomplish? And I think that's the core that we, that's where we start.
I think that's, yeah, it's definitely something to be considered because it is true. It's the old third law of physics. But I think we do need, if we have issues that need to be addressed by the city, that we propose those to the city. And if there are areas where it's going to affect other things, there will be push. I'm sure we will get feedback because we won't be the ones to decide what codes or rules are to be changed. The city or staff who's going to work on that, if they work on it, will determine that. And I'm sure they will get back and say, whoa, well, this is going to change this and this is going to affect this. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be some give and take. But I think we really still need to keep our eyes on the ball. We will be informed or educated at some point if someone says, well, can't do it this way, but I think your points are well taken, Kim.
And what are other cities doing? I mean, the thing that I'm hearing too, just in the process and understanding the process can take years. And for staff time, for what we're asking people to do to, you know, to make things better, you know, what's the lowest hanging fruit? We don't have to reinvent all of these things. If other cities are doing it successfully and we have a model to do that, we get some very results of what we're trying to accomplish. Another important aspect of this conversation is the waterfront development. If, depending on who you talk to, some people think they'll never see it. And that may not be true. That could happen a lot quicker. And you're talking about, you know, 20 or 30 acres and then about the same amount of space or similar space on the Oregon City side. There's significant, possibly imminent development opportunities. And this is where we have to start the conversations of how do you want this to look for the next 50 or 100 years? Those decisions happen now, and that's the legacy we're leaving the next few generations that are going to be living here. No pressure.
None whatsoever. Jerry, I was wondering if that process that we talked about, that Darren talked about, is the process that we will go through if we. No, not if, when we come up with our first idea to submit to the city via proposal, submit to the council, and they make a decision and act on it. And is it true that that would go back to you to see where and how staff member or funding can take place?
Yes. I spoke to Darren about an hour ago, and we just talked about it.
So, Kim and Victoria, you know, we could probably pin down right now some initial topics that we want to deal with. If you want. I don't think. Well, let me put it this way. I think that picking two or three key items to start with would be the best route. And if we do that, no, when we do that, do you feel it would be best to address, say, all three of those in a single proposal, or do one proposal at a time? All three at once?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get them with it?
Yeah.
Well, that was my thought, but I wanted to get the.
No, definitely. Partly because it takes so long to get through the conversations to get there, that if we did one, that would take too long to get to the next one and too long to get to the next one.
Okay.
And I think it makes more of an impact just to say, here are the top three.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We don't have, we've got some other things to talk about. We've got plenty of time tonight. We have talked about a few already. Do you all think we could pin down three right now? And then we can maybe get together aside or a couple of us and talk it over?
Let's brainstorm for 10 and then pick top three.
10? Boy, you're a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. It'll help me focus. It's like, where are we going with this? Let's get some ideas.
Okay, I got my fingers on the keyboard.
Okay.
Let's listen.
Top ones for me would be that on the permitting side for building permit that you've got, you know, that we have to, this is a big conversation thing, whether it's optional or whether it's a requirement, but at least a circuit, at least on the electric panel and conduit, you know, to the house for charging and for solar. And again, that's going to have to go through the planning commission if that's approved. Okay. The other one that I feel strongly about being connected to sustainability, we've been tasked with, you know, helping transportation to help save on car trips. And we all know we're in a transit desert and we don't have jobs here. This may be a planning commission conversation again, but about zoning, we need to talk about zoning for supporting business here, because we can have business here and we can have employers. And that's a much more sustainable future transportation model if people don't have to drive long distances to employers and then charging stations. So, I mean, because we got 10 minutes, Victoria, we can't just have a charging station at City Hall. You know, like, how are we implementing this in new developments? And how are we implementing charging stations? Do we need to require multifamily to put it on? Because if somebody's renting and or they're in a multifamily, they don't have the option to add a charging station. And that's a barrier to owning a zero emissions vehicle.
Oh, yeah. So.
I got two there. That's the charging station for cars and solar. And then your second one was zoning for supporting business.
Yep. Business zoning. And also, charging station on multifamily and at least a rough in for charging and solar on single family homes.
Well, I think it's an outrage that there were no charging stations put in when the city was, the street was redone in historic Westland. That was just.
Not for a lack of trying, Victoria.
I know. So if it were part of the code, that when streets are rebuilt, or I mean, where you need a fast charger is when you're doing business and going through town and going out, not necessarily at home. You can't use a fast charger at home. So I would, if you know, in that vein, lobby heavily for something that is like up at Safeway, fast charger there. And at the various places where we do business in town, which are very many.
New schools.
So you're lobbying for on this list of 10 city installed charging stations?
Yeah. If Estacada, with a population of 3,000, has one at their city hall, why don't we not?
Okay. Rhetorical questions.
Don't work.
Yeah.
I would like to have fast chargers, at least two in town, one by City Hall and one at the other end of town. It doesn't matter which end. There's a mall closer to, what's it called? Robinwood, that one?
Yeah.
You could put one there, and you could put one in Historic West Lynn on Main Street there. So those are my three places where I think we ought to have a fast charger.
And I don't know, and maybe Jerry can dig on this too. You know, the city's in process of talking about a TIF district in Willamette that goes Willamette Falls Drive all the way to the Arch Bridge. And that's in process. And I don't know if there, you can get infrastructure funding attached to those districts. It opens up opportunities. And maybe that's something that's tied into that development, because that would impact the waterfront development. If there's ways to, and maybe this is that carrot stick thing, there may be tax incentives to businesses that develop LEED buildings or sustainable infrastructure to encourage that development, because it's not a lot more money when you do it in the beginning.
Right. Terry, what about your idea of when developers are putting houses in to they must retain 15-20% of the trees on the place?
Yeah, I wrote that down just as tree removal on new home business development. That definitely, I think, needs to be addressed. It's I think it also goes along with the interesting codes that govern individual homeowners and how they can trim or remove trees. Those regulations seem to be rather draconian at times, but developers get to clear cut entire hillsides. So I think there is a disparity there that needs to be addressed.
I would include the school district.
Yeah.
Not just business, because it was a city code that the school district was having to obey in order to put in that big parking lot and cut out a third of the park. My neighborhood park.
Okay, so we got five items here.
See, not so bad.
And on that parking and on the trees, that's also, I mean, when we talk, we may have conflicts in some of our goals with affordable housing. At one point, it'd be great to have a meeting with the Planning Commission, because, you know, I was hearing that, I mean, the fees that we have, you know, to have more affordable housing, it's kind of an oxymoron. So, and there is a cost if you're protecting trees and working around them. So scorched earth, unfortunately, is a cheaper way to develop, because you can get in and out and you don't have to maintain barriers around things. So if there's a way also to incentivize that on permitting, you know, like, is there a reduction in permit fees if you're able to keep a percentage? You know, I mean, you know, if I had a piece of property, I'd want to get the most value out of it too. So how do we encourage that and make it work that the developers want to do it and it helps keep the housing affordable, so that we don't have these beautiful tree canopies and now the house is another $100,000. I'm on the number, but I'm just saying, as we're making these goals and a proposal, who do we need to talk to? And maybe this is you, Jerry, like, how do we make this work without negatively impacting affordable housing?
I think I don't have an immediate answer for that, but I think what you propose can be woven in with those goals. I think we can attempt to walk that line. I know that the planning team has been working on, you know, plans for clear and objective goals, as well as the housing requirements that come through the HBs 2001 and 2003. And I think that some of what gets talked about here and potentially through council can be overlaid with that. I think there's an intersection there. I don't think they're mutually exclusive by any means.
Okay, any other ideas about, since we're brainstorming about things related to codes and permitting and our future proposals to the city? Any other ideas that pop into mind? I don't know what it affects or how it affects, or it's just city policy, but there's the big issue of water usage by the city and also herbicide and pesticide usage by the city, which I think is too much. I don't know where and how those items would be addressed. So I don't even know if they are a part of what we're talking about here.
Policy, like a Parks and Rec policy, because that's part of your, you know, I mean, that's where the use is with the schools and the parks maintenance. So is that a city policy? Because that's really the only place you can exercise that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nothing to stop us from proposing something, but it'd be nice to know where that proposal is going to go and how much real cooperation there's going to be, because we've talked about it before, the water uses in the parks, there's a lot of pushback by the public. They want green lawns, but there's also the schools that, like, for example, up at Rosemont at the middle school, this summer, they were watering with a partially functioning sprinkler system. So there were these little round patches of green and all this brown and then little patches of green. And my contention is, why water in the first place on a schoolyard that nobody's on during the summer? It was a phenomenal waste. So I'm wondering where that gets directed. I know it's a school district property, but still, it's City of West Lynn.
There must be some kind of agreement between the school district and the city for water use.
I'm not aware that there is, but that doesn't mean that there's not.
Right. But what I witnessed at the local school was that several plants died for lack of water. Newly planted rhododendrons and things that are going to be more expensive for the school district to replace. Too bad they didn't pull it together to at least water the stuff they just planted. So how do we? Yeah, water is an issue and pesticides that would be good to think about. I don't know if it's top three right now.
To the water, you know, it needs to, I think it's important to be in there, because like Mount Hood right now, I know we're getting our water from the Clackamas River, but we're part of a community and we're part of a system. And Bull, you know, Mount Hood feeds Bull Run, and Bull Run goes to Tigard. You know, I mean, you don't think about Tigard on the mountain, but you know, we're indirectly impacted by those things. So having that smart, I mean, we're not in a drought. We haven't, I mean, we're in a drought, but we didn't get placards hung on our door of like, take a shower once a week, you know, but there are places in the United States right now that, you know, people are wondering if they can stay in their homes because they don't have water. So I think it's now is the time to go, how do we have better water policies? And maybe this is a longer term thing for the sustainability board to bring the utility board. We've talked about incremental pricing for high water usage for residential, because there is no different price whether you use a little bit or a lot.
I think your question is a good one to frame it. How do we have better water policies? I think that's a good frame for future discussion, if that's what it is. But I hope that gets into our notes, because that's a good clear question.
I think that the water issue coincides with the education series that just happened, but the water issue needs to definitely be addressed, because the future is drier and hotter. And then, yeah, if you notice the Clackamas River lately, it's the Clackamas Creek. A lot of water being sucked out of that.
And that's our drinking water.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, what we got? in our brainstorming, we got 6 items to think about. I mean, we don't have to think of others, but you know, you can think of other topics.
Jerry, you're here and you're passionate about the subject. Is there anything that comes to mind for you, especially in things that you're hearing with other cities?
About this topic specifically or sustainability more generally?
Well, I mean, like, we're going to be putting together a proposal, but if there are items that are hot issues in other cities, we can get a lot more traction with making a difference here if other people have taken action on those topics and have a model for us.
You know, so I don't hear a ton about sustain. So we had like a Clackamas County manager call on Monday, and we didn't talk about sustainability. Frankly, we're all still with what are you doing with your employees in COVID, which is like we're going to probably be doing that for much longer. And I haven't really heard a lot about sustainability issues in general in those calls. As it relates to water usage, I appreciated the session on Tuesday. And then I talked to Chris a bit before our meeting today, and he said he had data about the city's water usage, which I talked to Ken Warner about some time ago and just said, you know, if we were to reduce water, what does that look like? He said it could lead to a harder ground, but I think that there's a middle ground there, pun intended, of what we could do with water in our own facilities. I do have a memo somewhere I could send to the group when I find it about the herbicides and pesticides that we use in our parks. From what I can recall, it's minimal, and I can send that to the group. The cities that have banned things like glyphosates and Roundup entirely have usually developed a pesticide management plan, and there's usually a cost associated with that. I think Portland has, and I think Eugene has, maybe Salem has, maybe someone in that group knows. So that's sort of what I know related to some of the topics that we've discussed.
Well, since we're brainstorming ideas that get back to changes to the development code, kind of keep that in focus. I don't know that, yeah, we're sustainability advisory board, but I think we're focusing on the codes and permitting and policies. Anything else that is of import anybody can think of that we can mull over when we think about doing our proposal?
We don't need to do anything about overall fire prevention for forest fires, do we?
And I think that, yes, and I think there's a conflict there, because if you were to go, I mean, like, I think Barrington Heights became a fire, it's like a certification for, you know, for fire prevention. And so you do certain landscape methods. So you're clearing more things out, you know, to address fire. And, but that can be on the flip side, like if we're talking about where we're trying to have pollinator pathways and thing, you know, habitat for animals, it's like you're trying to clear that stuff out because it's a fire hazard. So it's like, how do you bring those things together? You know, I mean, we just went through wildfires last year, this time last year, when nobody could breathe. I mean, it's something we do need to address. And maybe that comes, maybe we tie this back into water usage, because, you know, the city, even like what Jerry's saying, where you can cut back water usages at your sites, at some point, can you just replace the landscaping with something that's rain gardens or low impact that doesn't need to, you know, it doesn't have a lawn anymore? You know, can you start phasing those things out to address all the things we're facing in the future? We're facing wildfires. That's not going to go away. You know, we're facing droughts. So, you know, you can turn the water down or you can turn it back, but it'd be great if you've got something established where you don't need to turn it on at all. I'm embarrassed with how much water I used this year because I had redone some landscape areas, and I had to keep watering it. And then the heat dome came, and it was horrifying of how much water I was using. It didn't keep my big trees from dying that you can see scorched around town. So, you know, I think if you come back to where we're at with the policies and procedures, if we can address water, if we can address alternative energy, which would be the charging and the solar, you know, those issues that are in the planning and the permitting process, I think that would carry through to some of the other areas that we're talking about, at least to get things going.
Water and energy use and tree cover.
Yeah. There you go. We got our three.
Yeah. Landscaping, and speaking of codes and building codes and landscaping codes, I just wrote down new homes or remodeled landscapes on homes. Maybe there could be a stipulation for X percentage of native plants that can handle, you know, the climate here, the changing climate.
Well, and we have a backyard habitat certification, so if we can continue to promote that, that directly ties into the native plants, yeah. Right?
Yep.
It's complicated because one of the trees of mine, my new trees that died in the heat dome was a native plant. My new currant bush croaked. It did, because there are plants that are suited to damp shade, and there's plants that are suited to not needing any water, and like coyote shrubs. So it's sort of, you couldn't just say native plants. See, that's what I meant about it being complicated. It would have to be native plants that don't need water as much. But yeah, it's a thought. I'd like to do it.
No, I totally agree. And I think it does get complicated because I'm seeing the same thing. You're like, okay, I've got native plants, but now if they need a different zone and they weren't designed for 110 degrees, you know, how do we transplant stuff? But if we can deal with, I would love to see what can we get done in the next year? What can we get done in the next 12 to 18 months? Because it will feed into these longer conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you think we got enough topics there to condense down into our proposal?
I do.
Once we start dealing with it? Okay.
That was kind of fun. Just
very good.
Just hanging out and thinking.
Very good. Okay. If there's no further discussion on that topic, let's say we jump on to item 7, and that's sustainability education series update. And since I heard glowing reports about Victoria handling this, Victoria, would you like to give us a little update on that?
Update. The slideshow that Christine Hollenbeck,
yeah.
Presented is available. She said she would be able to give that to us. I think she recorded her speech, her presentation.
It is on the city website, by the way. I think it's going to be on the sustainability website. I talked to Alicia today.
Okay, she talked at great length and with a terrific amount of excitement. She is a water geek, as she put it, and I thought that was completely delightful. She's been so she's very knowledgeable, and what I found most interesting was just the map of the Clackamas River water and where it's used. It was a lot of places. It's not just us in Oregon City. It goes clear up to Estacada and over to Tualatin and all over the place. There are something like 6 or 8 different entities that take water from the Clackamas and are grouped together to work together. So just the structure of the whole thing, where the water comes from. We should all know that. But most people just turn the tap on. The fact that they've got a great education series. Is very promising because it's good materials that we can pinch if we need them.
Excellent. Do you know, excuse me, how many people signed up or how many people were there?
I think 6 or 7. What do you think, Kim?
I think it was 8 or 10. I remember seeing two columns of 5.
Okay. Because people kind of kept adding in. Did Mary Baumgartner ever make it?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. So yeah, there were quite a few people. That's a nice bunch.
Well, using water terminology, you know, it primed the pump for our series. So maybe the next one, word will spread a little more.
Right. One of the things that prompted me was the lawn placard saying that you are turning your water off as of basically now, and not going to water anymore in order to save the Chinook run. And I thought, can I do this now? Because like Kim, I have just planted an entire backyard in new plants because I don't have lawn anymore. So I don't know, can I swear to that I won't water anymore?
Your neighbors too, Victoria. If you enroll a few neighbors, you're with team. We can do that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do we set the example? Do we put the signs out and let our neighbors see that we've done this?
And this is that. You know, that would have a lot of impact. Jerry, come on. These are good looking signs.
They are.
What would you like me to do? Put one up here? Okay. Fine. we don't get a ton of traffic at City Hall anymore, but I'm happy to do it.
But if you turn the water, if you've turned off the irrigation, if you can legit say that you did, then you can.
Oh, I don't know if
you can't just put the sign out how to do it.
I truly don't know enough about lawns. I'll talk to Ken. I'll follow up with him.
They don't need any water. Lawns do not need water.
So where do these signs come from? From Clackamas River Water?
What? Yeah. Yeah. And they're basically to you know, less water for so to help the fish out. I'm not using it in my yard, so the fish get more. And I have all a parade of middle or elementary schoolers going by my house, up to Sunset Elementary. All their parents, they see it.
Actually, if Jerry could get it with the parks, and we can do it at Willamette Park. There's a lot of people using, you know, any of the parks. Marius Young. Well, we have river use. If they can cut back in some of those areas between now, I mean. Mm-hmm. The rains are coming, so this is a great time to have those free, attractive signs out.
I like it.
So I think it was Lake Oswego, and somebody else had ordered about 30 signs from the Clackamas River protectors. What are they?
Providers.
So it's as a group, we can order a bunch, but then it's a question of I would drive around, I guess, and hand them out.
I like it. Well, the education series topic for for October was weatherization, and Mary Baumgartner was volunteered. But I don't think she's found anybody yet for that topic. So, I reminded her of that a while back. But if any one of us can come up with a person who could present on that topic, it might behoove us to toss that name out there and make feelers so that we don't come up short. It would be nice now that we got this started to keep it going. I'd hate to see it fall off because we couldn't find somebody.
I'll do it.
You will?
Yeah, I'll get a hold of Alex. He knows everybody.
Yeah, he does. I got a hold of the Clackamas sustainability people for a couple of others, and very helpful, very knowledgeable. So, okay. All right, I'm writing you down, Kim. The other two presenters for November and December have been lined up. So it looks like we're good. We may want to think about that we want to continue this series starting in January. And if so, we need to start thinking about topics and or possible people who could present.
Okay.
I think it's working out great online. I mean, it's nice to have the library, but you know, I mean, Jerry got to be in the comfort of wherever he joins all of his Zoom meetings, you know, without driving anywhere. And it seems like it's easier to get the attendees. So, yeah. You know, I think this makes it easy. You know, we can get local people or rock stars from anywhere, you know, if it's via Zoom. Mm.
We could also drill down in some of these topics. Instead of just being general, we could pick a topic. I mean, God knows energy savings and recycling are huge issues, but we could pick specific areas and get detail and show people certain techniques or where to take certain things or how to repurpose certain things. So, you know, we could certainly brainstorm that over a beer and probably come up with a lot of ideas.
January would be non-toxic. What do you call it? Non-toxic. Cleaners, because that's kind of like that time where you're all holed up in your house looking at dust and cobwebs.
Yeah. Is my typing irritating you folks?
Nope. I can't even hear.
Okay, good. All right. Well, that's a charge for all of us to think about. And you know, topics for upcoming months. And the Alicia Schroyer got back to me today and is posting the video of that the last session is on the website. And she was asking where on our SAB website to post it. She's going to put it there. And if I can just a little aside here, if you folks can kind of spread the word about the new SAB website so that, you know, people know it's there actually, and there are a few gems hidden in there that could probably be useful. And now that we've got something that could be looked at, it would be nice if we look at it critically and see what we can add in the future, delete or fix. Sorry to get off topic there, but it was just kind of fun. So any other news, thoughts, ideas on the education series?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that, the big topic 8 was what we were just talking about. Water usage recommendations. I think we danced around that one. Any thoughts here? I mean, that's probably going to be part of our proposal as far as things to the city, but as far as recommendations to the city, is there anything else?
What if we either said the city should cut use between May and October by 20% or gave some kind of clear guidance like that, or between July and October, or, you know what I'm saying? Or an annual drop of 20%. I bet it could be done.
I think annual is a good way to go, Victoria, because there's some places that you can't cut back and there's some places you can cut way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if we just recommended that the city just cut, but, and you know, I just picked 20, but that's just cut use. And if there were to be specific, wouldn't it be up to the city then to say, okay, where can we make those cuts? Or would that be part of our suggestion as to where they could be?
Well, I think it's a bigger conversation too, because, you know, is, are there opportunities for using gray water and that kind of thing? For, you know, like if you're reducing your water, is there ways to use other water to fill that gap?
Yeah.
But I don't think we have to get into the weeds with this stuff. If we're doing a proposal, then at least if it's approved, not if, when it's approved, then it gets filtered into the correct people to help figure out the details.
Once again, we're talking about something that could be documented in an audit, a baseline audit.
Yeah. It's measurable.
All of the things that we use, it's measured. And then you could see for sure, okay, yeah, we reduced our use instead of just looking at your water bill, which is a good place to look. But still, it, and also the city, you know, ideally should be an example. The city can say and advertise, okay, the city has cut back usage of water in this area, and it really didn't affect the operation of the city. If they say that, then that can kind of drain down to the public, and the public can say, oh, yeah, maybe I could cut back water usage. Or maybe like Southeast Portland, where almost all the lawns are brown.
Yeah.
They're all brown. And people could say, okay, maybe, maybe our pretty green face in Westland doesn't have to be green all year round. Maybe the back lawn we can turn off the sprinklers on. And guess what? We may save money. So.
But this comes back to something the city's already doing. So Jerry submitted the sustainability at work to, you know, we have four buildings in there, and promoting that, and that helps us leverage promoting our local businesses that become certified sustainable at work. So I think having the city lead on that and then lead on that conversation with water makes it a lot easier than to filter it into the business community and give those examples of programs that we're already participating in.
Yeah, yeah. That's why, isn't it? It's called leading.
It's leading because the water is part of that. That sustainability of work does address landscape water and water usage in buildings. So all the things we're talking about really do feed back into the program. So if we're able to utilize them, brag about them, highlight them, put them on our website, share that, that will amplify the conversation.
Okay, yeah, well, there are any number of little places where water use can be reduced, you know, by fixtures. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really easy target to hit, just reducing water usage.
Okay, there's some low-hanging fruit. Well, do we have further talk on this then?
I don't think right now.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about it, but I think we've
I feel covered.
Jumped on it a good bit. Probably going to be a part of our proposal that we do very soon. Any other comments on that? Probably not. Okay. Last topic on the agenda we talked about last time is still here. The Pale Blue Dot LLC pro bono work. I think that was, Jerry, correct me, or Kim, somebody correct me, was that related to the baseline audits we were talking about?
Yeah, Ted's available for a few things. I think I'm going to just ask him to do a greenhouse gas inventory. I'd be intrigued by what the results are of that.
I'm sorry, I don't know what a Pale Blue Dot LLC is.
That's the name of the company that I worked with in Minnesota. He was willing to do some pro bono work for us.
I remember you mentioning that, but I just remember the name of it. Okay.
Sure. But I think either the greenhouse gas, inventory or the audit of our facilities is something that I think we can do. And that's just a matter of getting some data and going from there. So.
Okay.
So is that something, Kim, are you there or are you gone? Looks like she's gone.
No, I'm here.
She's here.
Since that's supposedly pro bono, is that something that would just be an agreement between you and your friend? What's his name? Ted?
His name's Ted Redmond.
Ted, okay. Is that something that you would just arrange with him, or is that something that needs more discussion with us?
I can just arrange it with him.
Because I think the last meeting we were good with you having the conversation of, you know, I recall, but I'm not looking at the notes, if he was going to take a look at our climate action plan. I don't.
It is. That's something that he could do. Do you know, was anybody on this group part of putting that together? Because it looks like it evolved over time, right? How much data did you get for everything involved in that?
Are you talking about the strategic sustainability plan or?
Yeah.
Okay, that was done quite a few years ago. I think it was updated in what, 2015, was it? It was done by a larger group. Initially, 2005, 2008, my memory fails.
Sure.
And then we as board started about, I think, 3 years ago to go through that strategic plan and pull out all of the items that related to climate action.
Okay.
That's what we did. We pulled those out and put those in the new Appendix C.
Okay.
Appendix C contains all of the climate action items that were in the strategic plan. Did that answer your question, or was that nebulous?
This is what we were talking about, Jerry, with needing this baseline energy audit, because it was partially done. Like, if we had a baseline energy audit across the city and had that been completed many years ago, then at least you'd know where we were to have a comparison.
Right.
So it's like, please, for the love of everything holy, please get the baseline energy audit done.
Yeah.
So we have a baseline. It was there. It was halfway there.
We just keep coming back to that and back to that. It's just.
Yeah, we've been wanting this baseline audits for a long time. So it's hard to know. In the strategic plan, it said several places, okay, we'll reduce energy by 40% by this year. Well, how do we know? How do we know we've reduced it 40%? We don't even have a base from which to measure it. So until we have a base from which to measure it, we're just blowing smoke, which is easy to do, but meaningless. So until we get some valid baseline audits for these things, yeah, we're not going to know.
So when this was brought up, like, before me, what was someone asked to do it and then it just went away, or what happened?
Well, nothing happened.
Okay.
We were really, I mean, we asked so many times, nothing happened. We were given a couple of spreadsheets on water usage. We were given a spreadsheet on all the pesticides and herbicides that were being
right.
used. But these were just, this was just data. And you know, you say, okay, well, here's the electricity bills.
Right.
Well, you know, that's just data. Is it a baseline of what we're really doing across the board in all of these areas? No, it wasn't. And it's a broken record, which it's still skipping over that same scratch.
Okay.
To summarize, Jerry, we're so close. And then, you know, if you let years go by of so close, it's a rerun. So it's like, could we close the gap, at least get a baseline, and then you've got something to compare to for data? Because data is great, but if you don't have a baseline to compare to, you're making opinions.
Yeah.
I have a question. When we are asking for this thing to be done, what kind of person hours are we asking for? I mean, how much time would it take to do this?
An intern with electric bills?
Yeah. Well, if we were able to use interns or students like OIT did several years ago on the parks energy usage, which was really a great project for them. They did a phenomenal job.
Keep hearing about that.
Some students in to be they high school or college to work on a project that they're getting graded for to do these audits. Yeah, it's a matter of, you know, getting the water bill, looking at, okay, City Hall, how much water does City Hall use? Okay, City Hall uses January through December, every month, this is the water they use. Okay, now we've got the baseline for that. Duh, it's done probably in a couple hours. Now we'll know for sure if we implement some changes, low flow faucets or whatever, or no water urinals, we'll know if we've reduced water usage and by what percentage. But until we have those audits.
So I met last week with the local government a couple of local government faculty at Portland State about some other things. But one of the things we talked about was internships, mentorships, and shadowing opportunities, and they have a bunch. So I need to look through that, and I think that's a way that we could get an intern to not just help with this, but some other things, and have them get credit for the work that they do here. The other thing is, I mean, I don't think this would take Ted too long to whip up, so I'll talk to him about it. And PGE, like, they have, every time I talk to PGE, I usually talk to one, like, government relations person, but there's another staffer that I've been in touch with about buildings, fleet, and sustainability or resilience, and I'll follow up with her about just getting everything that we need, because she said that other cities were looking to do the same thing, and I haven't heard back from her recently, so I'll follow up with her again. I'm right there with you. I mean, like, you can't reduce anything if you don't know what you started with. So,
Jerry?
Yeah.
Do you have time to do this?
I won't do it. Someone else will take it on. Yeah. But the opportunities available through Portland State are in line with some of the DEI work that we're doing. Given how robust their internship program is, I'm really excited by that. And that was kind of the intent in bringing Ted along too, is that he's done these in so many other cities that
right,
he can hopefully maybe plug and chug, so to speak.
Let's get her done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be nice if that was a task that was put at the top of the list to just get it done, and we've got it.
It would.
Great. That would be great.
Here, here.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay. Well, folks.
I have a question for Kim after we finish the meeting.
Okay, offline. Once we adjourn?
Yeah.
Okay, when we adjourn and Jerry turns off. So anything else for the good of the cause?
I think we're good.
Yeah, great.
Thanks for a good discussion.
I think it's excellent. Okay, well, nothing else, then we will adjourn 7:13 early tonight. And Jerry can tell us if we're offline.
I think once I hit end, it ends for everybody.
Okay, well, Victoria may have to call Kim.
Sorry about that. Yeah. I don't know how to separate
them. That's all right.
I just want to know if you're wearing harmonicas.
Are they?
You're muted, Kim.
Yeah.
These are harmonicas. I can play a song on them and they're functional.
All right.
That's so out of sight. All right, folks.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks a lot, y'all. See ya.
Bye. Bye.